B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
From the Town Pier Tire Studio, Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Just a 90-minute show today, 90-minute-ish. We have matinee Bruins action against the Buffalo Sabres coming up at 1 o'clock here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. So thought we'd get right to it, Chris. You all right? You seem like you're coming in a huff, which I know all about that.
I'm mostly fine. You know, just a little bit of a late night last night. Went to that Celtics game, which was awesome. But just you can tell the traffic is picking up, like, which is probably a good sign because people are getting vaccinated. They're feeling better about where we're at. But yeah. It's a little aggravating.
Yeah, it's getting back to semi-normal. I even noticed last night because usually going home from here, 93 South on Friday nights in the before times was pure hell. Sometimes it could take up to an hour and a half. I live 15 minutes away, Dorchester to Melrose. It should never take that long. Last night it was kind of like that. Just like, oh, it's kind of before-ish. All right. Yeah. So on the one end, makes me want to drink bleach on the other. Maybe we're getting back to some semblance of normalcy. So
yeah,
got to weigh the good with the bad. But Patriots got themselves a new quarterback, Chris, two new defensive linemen, Mac Jones along with Christian Barmore and Ronnie Perkins, respectively. Barmore was a hit on the Felgren Maz big board. That was my throw.
That was your throw?
That was my throw.
One of the ones that hit something?
That was one of the ones that actually hit something and not a TV. yes, we take great pride in the big board. Bow to the big board. We're back after an asterisk year last year, what with the pandemic and everything. So after 2 days of the NFL draft, what do you like and what do you feel about how the Patriots have handled this in their first three selections?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, they were in a scenario here where obviously they had a need at quarterback. I don't think that Mac Jones was their first choice in terms of overall quarterback.
Yeah, I
think
either.
Jimmy Garoppolo was. But quarterbacks in this draft, sure. But I think that the only person who was more disappointed that Mac Jones was still on the board at 15 than me was Belichick, because it kind of forced his hand. Other people in the organization really liked the quarterback. He was the highest graded player still on their board, from what I'm told. They had a clear need at quarterback, and so boom, you got to take the guy, right? How many swings do you get at the quarterback thing? And so you have to take it. But I feel like for Bill, this is anathema to him because he doesn't feel like he needs to use the 15th overall pick on a quarterback. I still don't think Bill looks at this position the way the rest of the league does, which is that you sell out to get a quarterback. You can't win unless you have an elite quarterback. And I think we've seen that, Jim, this offseason, the way he's built the team. The way he built the team in free agency was to invert the model and say, we will have the talent around the quarterback elevate the play of the quarterback, not the other way around, with the quarterback elevating the talent that's around him, or lack thereof, in the case of Brady for a long time, when it comes to talent around him.
Yeah, there's only like two or three conclusions I can make so far with the Mac Jones pick. Overall, just for me, like, I'm glad that they did it. I wanted a quarterback in the first couple of rounds, but I'm with you in that I think that this was a group effort, you know, and I'm using air quotes there because I don't know if this was truly the guy that Bill Belichick wanted. I think it was Jimmy Garoppolo more than anything else. The price wasn't there. I don't know why. I mean, if this was the guy that you liked, this was the heir apparent to Brady, highest quarterback you had selected ever up until Thursday night. I would have thought you would have done anything to go get him and bring him back, but, you know, they always got to win the deal, so they didn't. And so the consolation prize, for all intents and purposes, was Mac Jones. So with that, you know, that's one conclusion. And with that, goodbye, Jimmy G. And then I also think, based on how Bill Belichick talked after the selection that night, is that Cam Newton is still, unfortunately, the quarterback this year. So I guess my question is then, you know, so like Mac Jones doesn't fit the Cam Newton offense. And that's what's odd, and it kind of implies, like you're saying, like this maybe wasn't the plan. This wasn't the guy. And if Mac Jones is the understudy, you would want him, I would think, to be an understudy in an offense that's designed for him. And the Cam Newton offense is not that. So something doesn't add up here.
Yeah, either Cam's going to have to do a better job running the more traditional style of Patriots offense than he did last year, because you can still run all those plays and then mix in the Cam runs. It's just that those plays weren't successful last year. So they had to lean heavier on the running game overall, and then obviously on the quarterback running game. And is this where someone's going to come and chirp me? Because every time we talk about Cam only throwing the 8 touchdown passes, you get the, well, what about all the touchdown runs? All those, you know, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis runs from inside yeah. the 5 that they could have given to any fullback on a minimum contract that padded Cam's stats. But they had to do more and more of that stuff because they were not a good red zone team. They were not a good red zone passing team. They were not efficient in the passing game. I'm not as worried about Mac Jones because I think that the floor on Mac Jones, I think, is low in terms of he's not going to be like a complete bust. I think that he'll be what I've called him, a Jag. You know, I think he, maybe with some great coaching here, he can be Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins is better than a Jag. What I'm worried about, though, is the other players around these two guys. It's like, well, which quarterback's in the game? Which style of offense are we running? Which plays are we running? What are we doing? It's not so much the quarterbacks, because I think when they're in, the play calling will dictate what's happening there, and it will work for them. But it's the other 10 guys who are out there who suddenly have to make these adjustments based on who's under center.
Do you think he'll get a legitimate shot to win the job?
Not a chance.
Yeah, I don't either.
Not early on, at least.
Yeah.
And the other reason I feel that way...
And you feel like it's going to be, like, extra weighted on him, too, right? Like, he's really going to have to, you know, shine in training camp to even get a sniff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what did Bill say? He came out, Cam's our quarterback.
So annoying.
I mean, look at the way Cam played last year, and he still... poor Jarrett Stidham couldn't even get a start at the end of the season in a meaningless game against the Jets. So, I know there's a different sort of feel... And obviously there's a different appearance to the whole thing when you take a guy 15th overall. But I think that Mac Jones will be the understudy. And here's the other part of it, Jim. Bill desperately wants to get back in the playoffs here. I don't think he's going to want to live with the growing pains, the mistakes, the learning curve of a rookie quarterback in the first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season, knowing that that could cost him a game or two, which could be the difference between making the playoffs or not. I think there'd be a much greater chance for Mac Jones to take over, say, after week 7 or 8 than in the first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season.
What can you tell me about Barmore and Perkins? Do you like these picks? And especially that they, you know, they moved up to get Christian Barmore, who some people talked about as a first-round talent, but for some reason he dropped.
Yeah, Barmore's a guy, he led that great Alabama defense in sacks last year. He's, you know, really talented guy. This is not just like picking up some plugger nose tackle. I mean, he can do that, and he's stout against the run. But this is a guy who also can rush the passer, and he's dynamic in terms of what he does. He can line up. You know, you could see him lining up at the 5 technique, a la Richard Seymour back in the day, or when they would move Vince Wilfork around or Ty Warren. Bills always loved that type of interior defensive lineman. I think the reason they moved up for this guy is that they see him fitting that sort of mold where they can slide him around on that defensive line, and he's a guy that will help them stop the run. They were 26th in the NFL last year against the run. They really, really struggled to stop it. That's been an issue for a while. But they also have wanted, now with a guy like Adam Butler gone, you have to make sure that you have some interior pass rush, and this is a guy who could provide it. And so they obviously moved up the 8 spots to get him. A lot of people thought this guy was going to go in the first round. So I like it. I think it's a good pick. I mean, he's a guy who I think could be an impact player on defense.
You got a comp for me?
If he works out, that's a good question. A comp for Barnmore. I can't say I do off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't say off the top of my head that I have a comp. But I can tell you how they're going to use him. And the comp on how they use him, I think, would be maybe Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork type. I don't want to comp him to Seymour because I think that's not
that's
fair.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, Seymour should be in the Hall of Fame. But he's in that mold of sort of great defensive lineman they've had before who can slide along the front.
And Perkins, the only thing I know so far about reading up on him quickly late last night is that he's a weed guy. And
yeah.
This is why he missed like 5 games last year. So one of my longstanding theories about the NFL draft, Chris, and sometimes they don't work out, but I've said it a million times in the past, don't sleep on the weed guy. If it's something like, you know, you're talking your opiates, your coke, like your hard drugs, yeah, you might want to shy away from that guy. It's 2021. Weed is mostly legal in this country, and I get it. You know, there's rules, especially when you're at school. You got to keep your nose clean, the proverbial nose clean, all that kind of crap. But weed, like, come on. So don't sleep on the weed guy. He drops because of weed, misses some games. I like it.
Yeah, no, he's – so you said you want to comp on the last one. He's smaller than this guy, but I think he's similar to, like, a Trey Flowers.
Perkins could be Trey Flowers.
Yeah, if he works out. Now, he's smaller. He doesn't have quite the same weight, but – You heard Belichick say this, and other people said he's a guy that even at that weight, Remember how with Trey Flowers, they would line him up inside at times to get the mismatch in terms of pass rushing, put him pass rushing a guard instead of pass rushing a tackle. I think Perkins could be that type of guy. And similar to Flowers, he's physical and he kind of has that junkyard dog fight in him. So I think that's what they're looking for with this guy, a guy that maybe can give them some of what they lost when they lost Trey Flowers. He should be good setting the edge. He should be better than a guy like Winovich setting the edge. I don't think he's quite as dynamic a pass rusher as Winovich is, but he is a guy who I think is just more physical. And that's something I know that they wanted to upgrade. They felt like at times last year, like they just weren't physical enough that they got pushed around. This is a kid who should not get pushed around, and if he does, he's gonna push back. He's gonna fight back.
Well, they got run all over. That was problematic. Look, I've liked what they've done so far. I think there's a lot to like.
I would agree.
I just wish it was, you know, how Belichick talked about the quarterback position after the Mac Jones selection just bothered me. Like, oh, it's still Cam's job. Just say it's going to be more of an open competition, please. That's what I want to hear. Like, enough with Cam Newton. But overall, a lot to like. I still would like to see them select a wide receiver here before the draft wraps up. But let's hear from you guys. What do you make of the picks last night? 617-779-0985. And how much influence did ownership and Robert Kraft have in that first-round selection of Mac Jones? We'll touch on that next here on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Chris Gasper and Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire. Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As always, draft day is always an interesting day. A lot of preparation, and you know, it's a way to see how things unfold. So, you know, Mac was available there at our pick, and you know, he's a guy we spent a lot of time with, and felt like that was the, you know, the best pick at that time for us.
My feeling is that Robert Kraft probably intervened and said, "This is what we need to do." And just think about it: now that Mac Jones has been drafted by the Patriots, the dogs are going to be called off. It really takes a lot of pressure off the Patriots in answering that question. Do the Patriots have a plan of quarterbacks? And so that'll satisfy at least the fans and the media around here until we see Mac Jones play.
Former Patriot Ted Johnson with his theory on the Mac Jones selection, number 15 overall on Thursday night to the New England Patriots, that ownership had a heavy hand in that selection. I would tend to agree. And here maybe is the real genius of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, chess and checkers.
It's Gasper Mari, 98.5 Sports Hub, by the way. He kind of can't lose. So, like, you know, people would ask, well, like, if he didn't want to do it, why'd he go along with it? Well, he can't lose. And he gets more years on the job at $25 million a pop, right? So, Mac Jones, if he's good, well, Bill obviously wins. The team is good.
And he'll take credit for Mac Jones so fast if Mac Jones is good?
Yeah. In the eyes of the public, he will get all the credit. You know, everything that he does is the right thing. And he's a genius all over again. He waited it out. It's the fifth quarterback taken. He found the best one and all that. And if Mac Jones blows, or he's Jack Jones, trademark Chris Gasper, if anyone wants those bad t-shirts.
You just can't bring yourself to say it, can you? Well, you can't. I can hear the disgust just dripping in your voice.
It's like fetch.
You know,
Stop trying to make it happen, like
a great comedic genius such as yourself. You are offended by my basic B nickname. I can tell. You are like offended by this. What do you think? So someone tweeted at me and said, "What about Meh Jones?"
I like that one. Meh.
You like Meh Jones? You can use Meh.
No, but I see you saw that, you retweeted it, you're like, I'm going to try to make this my own as I retweeted you. Nope, you're going to sleep in your Jack Jones bed and you're going to like it.
That's fine.
All that said, but you know
Jack
how this
Jones
will work.
Comfortable
if he is Jack Jones or he just kind of sucks, Chris, like, you know what's going to leak out in the internal power play, and Belichick never really wanted this guy in the first place, and, you know, it's not my fault, this is what they wanted, this isn't what I wanted, you screwed me, and now you got to give me another shot here, so you can't fire me. This wasn't my fault. You guys pushed me into taking him, so give me another shot at taking someone else. I got more years on the job at $25 million. He can't lose here, I feel like.
No, he can't. And there's another element here to this, which is that I do think ownership could have nudged him in a direction. I think the other people in the organization, too, I think Josh McDaniels really liked Mac Jones. I think Elliot Wolf and Matt Groh and all those guys who were in there, I think they all liked Mac Jones. So when Robert Kraft came out and said, hey, you know, we haven't done as good a job, I think, in the draft, and I've seen a change in approach. Well, if everybody is saying Mac Jones is the guy to take here, and Robert Kraft's sitting in that room, and the highest rated guy on the board, which Robert Kraft is staring at, is Mac Jones, and Bill goes, nah. I mean, how's that going to go over with the owner?
No. I just look, and I get from ownership standpoint why they would want to, again, air quotes here, nudge Bill and the brass into taking a quarterback because they know, like, from a marketing standpoint, if Cam Newton goes sideways again, like he did last year, which I think he will, like, that's a tough sell, and you're going to start to really piss off the fan base.
Your last year's Red Sox, if he goes sideways, people will bail on you and give up on you so fast, you'll become something the Patriots have not been in 30 years, and that's irrelevant.
Yeah, and you've got to sell the hope of the new quarterback. And a lot of times, more often than not, it doesn't pan out with that quarterback. But for a while, you're high on that hope. And and that's one of the reasons I like it. Like, am I a Mac Jones guy? No, I am not. I thought he was going to be a second rounder at best. I think it's a lot of overhype for him, and I think it had more to do with the talent at Alabama. And I'm mostly with you that he likely will be a Jag. But the hope of the first-round quarterback, that's a nice high to ride for a little while, Chris, until you either get to see whether until you see whether or not the guy's good or not.
I mean, this is exactly what all of the super fans like yourself, the literally card carrying Patriots fans, you know, those of you with the Patriots credit cards like Murray, this is what you need to do to sell to people like Jim, the target audience. What are you selling? You're selling hope. And hope is a powerful emotion to be able to sell. You're selling, we have a plan. It's this guy. You're selling the hope that you have that next guy after Tom Brady. And that's what they needed, I think, from an organizational standpoint, from a business standpoint. And you can't look at the end of the day, it is a business and you can't ignore that part of it. I think Bill would have been more than happy if the Jets hadn't traded up taking Elijah Vera Tucker and trying to get the quarterback in the second or third round. You saw the run that happened last night with the quarterbacks there at the end of the second round, start of the third with Trask and Davis Mills and Kellen Mond. I think he would have been happy to take one of those guys and get Elijah Vera Tucker, the offensive lineman. The Jets took that decision away from him, obviously. But for the Crafts and from a business standpoint, this is what you need, is to be able to sell, we have a plan, we have the next guy. I still don't think, though, Jim, it's as good a sell as Jimmy G would have been.
Yeah, this is the part that's really crazy to me, how in like 48 hours you've become like a Jimmy G guy. Like
48 this, hours. This has been months in the making, this transformation.
Months in the making. What a wow. What a heel turn this
is. Yes, it really yeah. I mean, this is a little bit like Shawn Michaels kicking Marty Jannetty through the plate glass window at the barbershop.
So much so, Chris, and this is a little inside baseball here. So you do, the Felgren Mass spot from home.
Yes.
Or parts unknown when you do the show on Fridays. So yesterday, and because Tony was from home yesterday, too, so it's just Mike and I here, and Mike's in the main studio. I'm in the little the hot take hot box. During the commercial break, I think after your second segment, Mike came into that room. He goes, can you believe that Gasper's become a Jimmy G guy? Like, he was that.
Mike said that?
He was, like, that jazzed up about it. He couldn't believe it. I'm like, no, I know. It's crazy. It's a heel turn. He used to be with me on the right side of history, and now he wants Garoppolo so bad because you just wanted to be right about Jack Jones and didn't want him here, and now you're a little afraid that this kid could turn into something and you're going to get blood to death.
There's some truth to that. Yeah, I am a little afraid of getting blood to death. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm in my take bunker, but as I mentioned, I've cracked it open just a little bit to let just a little light in that would allow for Jack Jones to be Kirk Cousins. I think I'm still safe. But in terms of Jimmy, I just think Jimmy is the best fit for the Patriots. And again, I know people in talking to people over there that
they felt that way.
I think they were more jazzed about Jimmy coming out than they are about Mac Jones.
So why not a stronger push to go get him? Was it just as simple as like Bill had and the Patriots had to win the deal and they weren't going to overpay for him? Because again, if they felt that strongly about him, why not just go get him?
I think that in the mind of Bill Belichick, Jimmy Garoppolo is a distressed asset, and I don't want to pay the full market price that other people have paid for quarterbacks for a distressed asset. Oh, you know, you look at it and Belichick's playing up the injury stuff, the salary, having to take on that salary. Part of the issue here was, would Jimmy be amenable to adjusting his deal to a number that the Patriots would be comfortable with? I don't really think he was. He knew that he could get a lot of his contract from other teams or by sticking with the 49ers. Jimmy absolutely wanted to come back here. I was told that by someone in his camp. He would have embraced and did embrace the idea of a reunion with the Patriots. But just like Belichick had his price, so did Jimmy. Jim, he wasn't going to come back and play for like $9 million of the $24 million base salary he was due. Between the money that was owed to Garoppolo and the fact that somehow, some way, the Patriots feel like the 49ers are going to have to just release him, which I still don't get, they just were not willing to pay the piper at quarterback for Jimmy.
Let's go to Tom in the truck. Was a thought on Jimmy Garoppolo. You're first up here on Gasper Murray this morning. Hey, Tom.
Hey, morning, guys. I don't know why they just can't still go after him. I mean, there's plenty of time between now and the start of the season. I can't see the Niners wanting to pay that salary if the replacement's there already.
But what if the replacement's not ready? What if the replace? So here's the thing you have to weigh in: opportunity cost. If they move Jimmy, it's not just moving on and moving the money. You're also sacrificing the fact that with Jimmy this year, you could compete. And with Trey Lance, he's seen as a little developmental, like he needs a redshirt year. So all of a sudden, your team goes from being able to compete to being not a good team.
I understand that, but it seems like all the alleged experts seem to say that Lance is going to be stepping in game 3, 4, or 5 or whatever, and then that's just going to be big money backup sitting on the bench holding the clipboard. I don't know. It just seems like if they make another push for him, they might be able to get him. Then you can release Cam. Then you don't have to worry about two types of offenses, and life is good.
No, I mean, I hear you. I'm not sure who the experts are who are saying that Lance. They said that with Mac Jones.
Yeah.
If the pick had been Mac Jones, that's why 3 was a pivot point in the draft. If they had taken Mac Jones, then you would have had a better chance at getting Jimmy at that point. But with Trey Lance there and the stuff that Kyle Shanahan has said, I mean, never say never. Trey Lance could come out and light it up, but he's played one game in 2 years, right?
Yeah. Let's go to Chris in Everett on Mac Jones. I think he wants to make a comparison for who he could be in the NFL. Hey, Chris.
Hi. So I'm a big fan of the ABC, anybody but Cam. But I saw this article that said that the comp for Mac Jones was Jared Goff. And I know people keep saying that Bill Belichick is going reverse to what the entire NFL is doing, which is stack the team and get a mediocre quarterback. Didn't we just see what happens when that happens with the Los Angeles Rams, who have Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, who's a generational talent in the defensive line, and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp? That team is stacked, and they didn't go anywhere because they had Jared Goff.
That's
and
true,
that's
Chris. Yes, thank you. And put your windows up when you go through the car wash.
That was a good call, though.
I don't know who made that comp to Jared Goff. You know how I feel about him.
Yeah, Goff. Yeah, it's another one of the quarterbacks that you love.
It's blonde Garoppolo. you know, like, I don't know. It was Mac Jones. Was he getting all the plays wired into him before the ball was actually snapped like Goff always did? Like, I don't know that to be him.
No, Mac Jones would adjust plays, and that's the stuff he's good at, getting you into the right play. When you look at Mac Jones and what the appeal would be for the Patriots and their scouts and Josh McDaniels, first of all, I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz. You have to know a little bit about Josh McDaniels' history. This is a guy who thought he could win with Kyle Orton.
Yeah.
He chased off Jay Cutler when he got to town in Denver, and you know why he chased him off? He looked at Cutler and said, this guy's too erratic, he's too much of a cowboy, he makes too many mistakes. That's important. Keep that in mind. This guy makes too many mistakes. So he wanted to get Matt Cassel, and Bill kind of screwed him and traded Matt Cassel to Kansas City. In fact, I remember Josh saying at the owners' meetings that year, basically, I don't know why Bill wouldn't trade him to me, but he wouldn't trade him to me. He wouldn't trade Matt Cassel to Josh in Denver. So now all of a sudden Josh has to go with Kyle Orton. I mean, Kyle Orton is a Jag, but he liked that guy. He won the first 6 games with that guy. So when you look at Mac Jones, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over and can get you into the right play, the coaches like McDaniels believe, like, well, I'll do the rest of it. I'll do the other 50, 60% and make this guy a winner.
All right. Well, we'll get more of your calls at 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on the Mac Jones pick, your thoughts on the 2D linemen selected last night. Again, 617-779-0985. Coming up, though, someone who knows Mac Jones very, very well, covered him week in, week out at Alabama, has some questions about the pick for Bill Belichick and the Patriots, but more importantly, he says that Bill Belichick has become very lazy. We'll get to that audio next here on Gasper Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm also a little concerned about this rather lazy, Bill Belichick knows what he's doing. Really? Have you guys watched the New England Patriots in the last couple of years? Tom Brady knows what he's doing. I'm not sure Bill Belichick does. He's made some dubious coaching hires, starting with his son. And he's made some, I think, disastrous draft choices. So I like Mac Jones a lot. I know I'm burying the lead here. I think he's a very good quarterback. Will he be a great NFL quarterback? I have no earthly idea. But don't confuse the fact that just because Bill Belichick drafts you and he's never drafted a quarterback before, well, big deal. I mean, why did he need to draft a quarterback in the first round before, that Mac Jones is automatically going to be the next Peyton Manning?
All right, nobody knows the SEC like ESPN's Paul Feinbaum. There he is there, sharing his thoughts on the Mac Jones selection and going in hard on Bill Belichick on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. That's ESPN's morning show there.
Is that like a riddle? Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, something I don't want to listen to ever.
for 400, Alex. Yeah. That's cool. But still, you sent me this clip, and when I first saw the headline, I was like, this is going to be fluff. And when I actually heard it, I was like, wow, he went in. I don't know if he's got an axe to grind against Belichick for some reason, or maybe he's more closer with Nick Saban.
Maybe. Feinbaum's, he's always been a flamethrower.
Yeah.
He's always been a flamethrower, but normally it's just, SEC country flamethrower. Now he's stepping out and going after the best coach in the NFL and the greatest coach of all time.
Yeah, so rather lazy. I'm not Tom Brady knows what he's doing. I'm not sure Bill Belichick does. He's made some dubious coaching hires, starting with his son. He's made some disastrous draft choices. The latter part of that over the last 3 years or so, yes, that I would agree. Do we know that Stephen Belichick is a disastrous
coaching hire? No, Stephen Belichick's a good coach. I've said this many times on this station. In some ways, he has the misfortune of having the Belichick last name because people are just so easy to dismiss him as not knowing what he's doing. I've talked to a number of players over the years that have been coached by him. They have a lot of respect for him. He is a very good coach, along the lines of like a Kyle Shanahan. I'm not saying he will be a head coach someday like Kyle Shanahan, but Kyle Shanahan, yes, it helped him at times having the Shanahan name, but it also hurt him where people say, well, you only have this job because of this. Well, Kyle Shanahan's a pretty good offensive coach. We'll see what he is as a head coach. Stephen Belichick's a pretty good defensive coach, and players respect him.
Do you believe any of that, though, that Belichick's getting lazy late in his career?
I don't think lazy's the right word. I thought that was really, first of all, it's a great take in terms of just for our purposes, right? It's like, oh my God, shots fired, right? I don't think it's lazy, but I do think, and this ties into something I also sent you this morning, the bite from the kid Ronnie Perkins who they drafted,
right, yeah.
Where he's just slobbering all over Bill and all over the Belichick family. And remember, Bill did say at one of these coaching symposiums that at this point in his career, he's at a point where he just wants to coach guys that he likes. So I do think there's an element, I don't want to call it laziness, but I do think that maybe he has a little bit of a narrower field of vision now than he had in the past. And it's, well, I trust Nick, so I'm going to take these Alabama guys. So one thing we haven't talked about, they're drafting these Bama guys, and I think the two picks they made, regardless of those guys were at Bama or not, I understand why they would take them. But then you go and you pick Ronnie Perkins, who I like, in the third round. But who did they pick last year who's sort of similar to Ronnie Perkins, who's from Alabama? Anthony Jennings? Like, what is Anthony Jennings' role on this team now? If you have to draft Perkins, really then was the Jennings pick a good pick? Where's he going to play? You had to draft Perkins, and you had to go out and sign Matt Judon. So are you just picking guys from Alabama because they played for Saban, because you think it's an easier projection? And Bill even said, their system is somewhat similar to our system. He talked about that idea. And so I think that's kind of where Feinbaum has a point. It just feels like when it comes to getting players now, the field of vision for Bill is narrow, and it's narrower than it's ever been. It's like this SEC guy, this Bama guy, this guy that played for a coach that I know, and maybe that's part of what Robert Kraft was talking about and saying, I've seen a change in approach. Maybe now the scouts who are going out all across the country, at least in pre-pandemic times, and are casting a wider net, maybe they are listening more to those guys casting a wider net instead of Bill just like drilling in on his coaching buddies.
Yeah, you mentioned this quote from Ronnie Perkins, and this is a portion of it. And this is him talking.
It's like the defense of Cam Newton here.
Yeah, him talking about some of the interview process that he had with the Patriots before this election. I was mind blown. I wasn't talking to Coach Bill Belichick, but I was talking to Coach Steve Belichick. And I was really still mind blown that I was talking to somebody who's part of the Belichick family. I'm sorry. How do your eyes not roll in the back of your head after hearing that? Like, come on. Like, oh, you're the son. I'm still just so honored. Let me bow before you. He goes on to say, you mentioned that name. That's just one of the most legendary head coaches in the NFL. So just to be talking to his son, who will probably be just like him in a few years. Oh, come on. Definitely talking to him was a huge blessing, and I was super excited. Now I'm super excited to go in and play for both of those guys. Again, you understand why he was selected.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. And that's so I think that's kind of what Feinbaum's saying, whether you agree with it or not. Are these things factors for them? Again, You have people who, it's clearly a factor in Cam Newton getting to play here, the fact that he just is perpetually.
Kisses the ring.
Yeah, he has become a Belichick bootlicker, and he's doing that the whole time. And so can you ingratiate yourself to Bill and his coaching staff by telling them how great they are, and does that lead to them maybe overlooking some flaws in a player, or when it comes down to a choice between this player and that player, are they saying, are they chalking up to character? They're saying, well, I like this guy's makeup and character better, when it's really like, I like the fact that this guy showers me with compliments.
Let's go to Christian in Oklahoma. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Christian.
Hey, good morning, fellas. I'm actually in Wyoming. I'm a mover, so I'm working.
Oh, wow. All right. Hey. I've been to Cody once. I liked it very much.
Laramie's a fun town.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, wow, west. Hey, I haven't heard it discussed, and you guys almost kind of alluded to it a little bit. Don't you think Belichick's strategy on letting guys go a little bit before their time, and even with his drafting right now, that he looks at a five-year window, and it's who can contribute now to get me that one Super Bowl so I can go out? And you know he wants Shula's record. So I think that, you know, he's not going to let guys go early. And then he may be the guy that leaves the cupboards dry for the next guy, but he gets those records he wants. That's all I got.
No, that's interesting, and that's a good point in terms of the overall plan here and the activity in the offseason, particularly in free agency, Jim. A lot of people looked at it.
Yeah,
and they say, well, you know, it was a market inefficiency that they were taking advantage of and all this other stuff. I do think Bill looked at it and said, I don't have time for a traditional rebuild retool. We need to get back to winning now. I'm 69 years old. I do think there's a factor there. And we always talk about Tom Brady's dwindling championship window, Tom Brady's athletic biological clock. What about the biological clock in terms of winning championships for Bill Belichick? He's 69 now. Is he going to coach until 74, 75? If you look at it, I think he'll coach at least until 72. But you look at that, that's only 4 more years.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think he would want to try to, you know, the philosophy has probably changed that he wants to try to win as much as possible now. Because, yeah, to get to 75, look, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be him, as long as he stays healthy. But, I don't know, at some point, don't you just, like, the grind has to, and I know he's dialed things back here in the last few years, but at some point, it is still a grind. You got to be like, all right, I've had enough. I've accomplished enough. I'm the greatest coach of all time. Like, see ya. Let's go to Kevin in Framingham, who wants to talk about Mac Jones. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, guys. It's Kevin. Love the show. I just want to talk about Mac Jones, and I have really high hopes for him.
Sure.
If you talk about the mediocre pocket quarterbacks in the NFL right now, like Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins, they struggle against pressure. And I just think a guy like Mac Jones, he handles pressure very well, and he takes a hit, delivers accurate footballs, and I think he's got a really good chance to be a star.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I hope the best for him. But in terms of him and pressure he dealt with, I don't know. Like, again, with the offensive line that Alabama has, year in, year out, no matter who the quarterback is, you're always going to be successful at quarterback at Alabama over the last 15 years or so, as long as Nick Saban's been there, Chris. Like, I don't know. Do you have to take that with a little bit of grain of salt? Do we really know whether or not he can handle pressure yet?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we do, because it's not just the offensive line there. And Evan Lazar, CLNS Media, had a great breakdown of Mac Jones. It was really good. And he really, I think, highlighted the strengths of Mac Jones. So if you disagree with me with the Jack Jones thing, this Evan Lazar piece is for you. But again, when I looked at some of the plays, I'm just looking at how perfect the pocket is as he's diagnosing these defenses and making these plays, particularly on the intermediate to downfield stuff. He just has so much time. And then the other thing is, there's a play in there where he is pressured, and he does a nice job getting rid of the ball, and he goes to the right read. But you look at it, and both Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle, two guys who went in the top 10, they're both open. Like, he had the ability. Of course you can have anticipatory throws when you have those two guys, because you can anticipate they're going to be open, because they are all the time. It's just interesting to me, how do you separate Mac Jones from what was around him? When you look at the fact that, including Mac Jones, a quarter of the first 24 picks in the first round of the NFL draft were Alabama guys. He and five of his teammates comprised a quarter of the picks out of the first 24 picks in the draft. Think about that. And out of the six guys overall, including Mac, five of those guys were on the offensive side of the ball.
One thing I just won't tolerate when it comes to Mac Jones, even when he does start playing, even if he is successful, and I blame ESPN's Mel Kiper for this, any Tom Brady comparisons. He should not be compared to Tom Brady. Nobody should.
Blasphemy.
Well, the whole concept's ridiculous, Chris. There's not going to be another Brady. It would be fair to call Mac Jones a traditional pocket passer, and that's as far as anyone should go. That's it for now. Those are, well, he's Brady-like. Nobody's Brady-like. F off with that. Again, thanks, Kuiper, for bringing that up in the first place.
Can I give you, I did this yesterday, but I just want to give it for our listeners. The comp, this is Pro Football Focus. They're not always right. Nobody's always right, but they have some pretty good comps a lot of times. Their comp for Mac Jones is Derek Carr. And I think this is the type of quarterback, and that's when I say Jack Jones, that's what I mean. Like, Jack Jones is not, this guy's terrible, he stinks. But I think you are now in that Andy Dalton, Derek Carr sort of quarterback vortex. And it's a real question as to, now we're really going to learn, I think, how far Bill's coaching can go. Like, we learned Bill's coaching has limits last year. Like, he can't have a completely terrible quarterback and win with Cam Newton. But can he have, like, an average quarterback, a guy who's in the back half of the, he's in the bottom 16 quarterbacks in the league, and maybe he's 17th or 18th. Can you win a championship with that guy? I think we're about to find out.
All right, we'll run through your Patriots calls and lead into the Sports Hub Celtics show here coming up in our long commercial-free segment. And also, really, there's not many conclusions that I can draw just yet with the selection of Mac Jones, but there is one, and it's truly a win for yours truly. And we'll get to that next here on Gasper Murray.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The dream is completely over. It is for this year.
Yeah, it looks like Jimmy's going to be the starter until he gets his ass sat when Trey Lance is ready, whenever that is. And in that scheme, I think it could be pretty early. Look at RG3. He went from Baylor, which was one of the simplest offenses, to running that and being offensive rookie of the year. Trey Lance can't do that after trading up 2 first-round picks. You know, I would be surprised if Trey Lance does not play this season for the 49ers, and then we'll see. But the Patriots got their Jimmy G.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yep, cue up the Seinfeld popcorn meme. That's a shame. No more Garoppolo talk. No path. The dream is over. Garoppolo is not going to be part of the Patriots in 2021. Again, that's a real shame. And I know Mike will continue to try to find a path. Felger will on Felger and Maz. And Maz will likely cry in his pasta. But me, I'm as happy as a clam because, like, good enough. And look, and this is also, at the risk of contradicting myself, Chris, I would have welcomed him back because ABC, okay. Anybody but Cam. But I like the unknown and the upside of the rookie quarterback. And with the rookie quarterback and Mac Jones being selected at 15, there's no need for Garoppolo this year. Maybe next year if he's cut, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But for this year, like Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal just said there, the dream is over. Let's go to Elliot in Boston. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Elliot.
You know, you guys said that, Mac Jones, might not be able to play this year or early on because Bill doesn't have tolerance for his mistakes. But Cam is going to cost you games though, because of his lack of ability. So if Mac Jones was going to be the pick at 15, I think the biggest second guess that we can do in Belichick is if that was going to be the cost for a quarterback, why not pay the first-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo weeks ago and really accelerate this process?
Now, and Elliot, thanks for the call. I said, too, want to be consistent here. After all that spending spree in free agency, and you bring in all these weapons and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry at tight end, like, at that point, like, okay, you're going all in, then move the 15th pick to get Garoppolo back. You thought that would be too high. You said, what, next year? Like, to have a...
Yeah, give him a second-round pick next year that has a path to becoming a first. And even that, I think by the end, I felt like they wouldn't have to do that. All they'd have to do is give him a third that had a path to being a second. So that's assuming that San Francisco was willing to do that. I think San Francisco was looking around and saying, these duds, Carson Wentz and Sam Darnold, this is what they're getting back for these guys. So for Jimmy, we have to at least get that back. And it seemed like, again, Belichick was just balking at that price. But would I have given up a second round pick that could become a first or... 2 seconds, one this year, one next year for Jimmy? Absolutely.
Just as an aside, I don't know, this popped in my head too. You know who are idiots like in this draft so far to me? Who? Well, the Falcons for one. I mean, like,
your Falcons?
They're going to continue to invest in Matt Ryan. It's the most Falcons crap possible. The Carolina Panthers, who supposedly had all this interest in Justin Fields, right? And so he's available at 8. They don't take him, and they take Joe Horn's kid, right? J.C. Horn, the cornerback.
Yeah, from South Carolina.
So you're all in on Sam Bradford? Sam Darnold. Same difference.
Freudian slip, huh?
Yeah, right. I know. Like, that one's one. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think that they were smoke screening people. They were trying to get somebody to come up to them. I mean, once they traded for Darnold, it was so weird that you were still hearing, okay, we're interested. And then they picked up Darnold's fifth-year option, too. We're still interested in taking a quarterback. They were just trying to convince somebody to give him a haul and come up for Justin Fields. That's what they were trying to do. Like I said, it's the lying season.
Then move back, because Horn, according to all prognosticators in mock drafts, would have been in the teens. So you had to take him at 8? I don't know. That one made no sense.
I think that's one of those ones. I had Bob Quinn on the Take 5 podcast, former Lions GM and former Patriots personnel guy for 15 years here. And he said that he basically explained sort of this Carolina thing before it even happened. He said a lot of fans and media don't understand that it takes two teams to do something. There are times that you want to trade back and you can't because nobody will work with you on it. And so do you then just say, we'll just take our guy here, or do you take a bad deal and risk losing your guy? For example, he said to me that when they drafted Jeff Okuda 3rd overall, they wanted to draft Jeff Okuda, but they wanted to move back. But nobody would do it. So they just took their guy. So I think that's what happened to Matt Rhule in Carolina. They obviously knew they were overdrafting their guy, but nobody would play ball with them.
I think you agree with me on this. Do you know how much it pains me to have to say Joe Horn's kid or Asante Samuel's kid?
I know, Asante Samuel's kid. Yeah, I'm repping Florida State today, so yep.
I like that hoodie, too. That's nice. Yeah. Chris, we're a million. Like, these guys to me, like, oh, they just played a few years ago. No, they didn't. Like,
it's mine. Like, you always hear that, you know, this guy's kid, that guy's kid. It's like, you know, sometimes when I'm watching an NBA game and I see Kenyon Martin Jr., I'm like, oh, what are we doing? Like, this is insane. How old am I?
Let's wrap the Patriots calls with our guy, Tommy and Lynn. Tommy!
What's up, boys? How are you?
Hey, Tommy.
You sound down. What's going on, Tommy?
No. I'm not down. I want to think about Cam Newton. I don't want him to be outside of week one, Murray. Anybody but Cam, like I said yesterday. I want Mac Jones to be the starter because Cam will be on a tight leash this year if he messes up. And I don't want him to be the starter. And what do you guys think about the picks today? What do you guys think about today's picks? What do you think they're going to do?
Tommy, thanks. Well, I would like them to at some area, like address wide receiver, that still feels like that's a hole to me. You could use another slot guy now that Edelman's retired or biding his time before he goes to Tampa, whatever the hell's going on there.
You're still on that?
Maybe. Where else, though? Where else could be a need? Maybe some depth at linebacker?
Linebacker could be a potential need for them. Jabril Cox still on the board, but I think he'll go pretty early here as the draft just getting underway now at noon with the rest of the draft. I would say the strength of this draft that matches up with the Patriots right now and some of their needs, defensive back. There are still some good corners on the board at this point. Tay Gowan is a guy who's interesting. Marco Wilson from Florida. Robert Rochelle. Cameron Bynum. Thomas Graham from Oregon might have a little bit of Logan Ryan in him. Hmm. And also safety. There's a guy I really like. I think you have to look ahead to replacing eventually
Devin McCourty.
There's a guy I really like, and that's Caden Stearns from Texas. Yeah, he's sort of your classic center fielder, free safety type of guy. I think he'd be a very good fit.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.